There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
There are challenging days ahead, but your future is in your hands.
There is Vice President Mike Pence as we get started on Midday Mobile this Wednesday. A couple hours of live local talk. Glad you're along. Phone number, text line 343-0106. Hey, y'all. My name is Sean, and a lot to do on today's show. By the way, too, I saw the note here. No big surprise. Walmart and Procter & Gamble, the two best performing stocks out there. Hey, Dalton, can we check if how many of those Loeffler bought? How many shares did Loeffler buy other than buying the makers after having the committee meeting where they got to information about the coronavirus before everybody else, and that there was some stock selling? You also talked about this morning there were stock purchases that bought stocking companies that made the masks, the N95 mask. Just see if any kind of purchase of Walmart or Procter & Gamble, because those are the two. I just would like to know, you know, in my trading life, if I'm looking at equities, if I could just have a ticker showing me what members of the Senate are buying after coming out of, getting briefed on the issues facing the world, if I could just see what they did with their stocks at that point, I think things would be looking great out there. All right, 1208 FM Talk 106.5 on today's show. We'll talk a couple different things on the way. Number one, we're going to go from the end of the show backwards, but I want to let you know, if you're with me at 1:30, if you're like so many folks that are working from home right now and you're quarantining yourself, you're socially distancing yourself, but you're telecommuting, you know it's a distraction fest right at your house. You're trying to work, but if you're like me, got children there, you've got other things going on. I got Dr. Jim Golke coming on with us. He's an expert in instructional design and learning strategy, and he's got some tips for us if we're going to work from home, how to like set up the home, maybe some rules and some ideas here to try to get some efficiency out of working at home. Right, so you can get some more done and try to minimize those distractions. Also, what is it? What are we looking at for the city of Mobile when it comes to the lack of events? And what does this mean for revenue going forward? We're going to talk to Emily Gonzalez from Visit Mobile about this coming up in just about half hour. But I do want to start off the show with a friend of mine, and he was on with our buddy Cam Marston on yesterday's What's Working Special Edition, and he was talking with Cam. Came a couple things in the discussion. I was sitting here writing notes down feverishly, and I said, man, I got to get Matt on the show to talk more about this. So he was gracious enough to say yes, and if y'all didn't catch him yesterday, it's former judge, attorney, and all-around good dude, Matt Green, joining us right now on Midday Mobile. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks, Sean. Appreciate you having me on again.
Man, it's a pleasure. Because I want to get to the executive order that's gone out for the city of Mobile and a discussion of those stores that are still open, limiting capacity to 40% of, I guess, what the fire marshal says. But before we get to that, I want to kind of go back to the conversation you and Cam had yesterday. And I think business owners and all of us out there should be interested in the law around coronavirus. And maybe many people will be scratching their head and say, what law, or maybe I should say the liability around coronavirus. What are the questions out there, and what answers do we know right now about somebody, they catch coronavirus at work or they catch it at a store? Is there any liability there?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's two in theories of liability. One would be against a potential co-employee or third-party customer that transmitted it or gave it to you, or two, whether you would have a claim under your workers' comp type scenario against your employer. I just think both of those, I mean, they're very difficult now to prove in terms of when you, how you contracted it, especially with this 14 days. They're saying you may be up to 14 days before you show any signs or symptoms. I know there's a lot of uncertainty in the workplace, but, you know, it could be highly speculative. And secondly, you know, that's not gone unnoticed. The questions that you're asking has not gone unnoticed by the legislature. And I mentioned yesterday Senator Arthur Orr, that's a Republican out of Decatur in the state legislature, has a bill that he, I think, is planning to propose, and he's got it drafted, I believe, basically shielding employers for liability for what you just talked about. It's a COVID-19 immunity bill, basically what it is. And it said, you want me to read just to you a brief excerpt of it?
Yes, yes.
It says, basically, a business entity that is properly licensed to conduct business in this state is not liable for any injury or damages, including death, suffered by an individual resulting from the individual's actual or alleged contraction of the coronavirus from another patron, an employee, or any other individual while on the premises of the business entity. Well, it's not the law now. What about those persons or potential victims up until now that have contracted it? Well, he's got language in the proposed bill that makes the bill retroactive to March the 1st of 2020. Now, that's not law, but that's at least one of the proposals that I think the legislature will be taking up in the next session.
Well, Matt, help me understand something, because let's pick out flu, right? A or B strain flu can be deadly in some cases out there. We talk about the flu deaths. Is there any precedent set where people were suing businesses or employers because they got the flu?
There may be. I'm not aware of any. And, you know, with the modern advent of workers' compensation laws, there's some instances where their occupational diseases or diseases contracted because of your employment may be compensable. But, you know, unless you're really a first responder or work in the healthcare industry, it'd be very difficult for an employee, I would think, to establish your contraction of the disease was related to your employment. And that's just very difficult, I think.
Yeah, so that's why, I mean, I wonder why you and Senator Orr moving this bill, I guess, but is that something that would be challenged, I guess? When I hear that they're going to move something, and Lord knows there's not much moving in Montgomery right now, but they're moving to work legislation here, that makes me think they see some impending crisis from it, right?
I probably say. They're probably getting a lot of calls of concerns of business owners. What happens if we have claims of customers or, you know, a business owner who has an employee who unknowingly has contracted the coronavirus and their patrons are exposed to it? I think those are the kind of situations that the immunity he's trying to afford these businesses. And perhaps he's considering the fact that businesses right now are on the tipping point. Can they sustain such a body blow just to the complete shutdown? Can they sustain any further damage or injury without some type of protection? And it's a good question. And whether they can, can they apply, make this retroactive? That's another issue or concern as well. But I think that's kind of like what you're saying. There's probably some concern with the uncertainty of the current state of affairs.
Yeah, I wonder if looking, and I don't know that, and we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but looking at like the cruise industry and the norovirus, right? Is there liability? I mean, they're always saying, oh, if people get sick, they're going to give them vouchers for their trip or this or that. I'm just looking at the cruise industry in general.
Sure.
But are they doing that to avoid some real liability? Is there an expectation that you get on the cruise ship and you don't get sick, right? I mean, is it a reasonable person would expect that?
Yeah, and it also depends on the conduct of the party. For instance, you know, there should be an employer maybe should be treated differently if they had knowing or actual knowledge of an employee that has the virus right. and continues to require that employee to report to work, versus, you know, an employer that unknowingly has an employee that's contracted the virus and, you know, doesn't test positive for weeks later.
Now, as we look through this, you and I are going to bounce a couple things back and forth here, and that is people will often say, well, right now, this law or this other thing, this is important because we're in a crisis. At the same time, there's those of us and that look at this and say, okay, we're in a crisis, we have to navigate this, but let's not do this at the full cost of civil liberties, right? I mean, is there a measured approach? I guess that's the fairest question. Is there a measured approach to this, Matt?
Well, I mean, if you believe in the Constitution and civil liberties, some rights are beyond debate. I agree with you. But you're, you know, it's kind of like, you know, pestilence like times of war, the laws are silent. You know, these temporary emergency orders keep getting extended. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, and I think they should. You know, the problem is if they came out and gave themselves enough to work with here, then we would question it as well, right? So it's going to constantly have to be updated going forward. Can you hold on during the break? And I got a couple other questions here. We're talking to Matt Green, attorney, former judge, and I want to talk about his podcast too, Channeling Atticus Podcast. I want you to check that out too, since you're going to have some time. I'm just saying, you might have some time at home here over the next couple of days or couple of weeks, and I might get started with a new habit and checking out that podcast. We'll do that when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And good to talk to my buddy Matt Green, a former judge, an attorney, host of the Channeling Atticus podcast. Matt, give somebody a quick slice of what that's about. And I know you're full of different subjects, but what's the overall umbrella?
It's a Know Your Legal Rights podcast where we talk about different legal issues that people may face in their everyday life, whether it be criminal issues or questions regarding criminal law, or, you know, I do a lot of personal injury. We talk about personal injury cases, of victims of that sort of thing. We also talk about qualified immunity and civil rights. And we have a wide variety of things we're talking about, but we certainly hadn't had a lack of things to talk about these last 3 weeks, I'll tell you that.
That's for sure. And that's available wherever finer podcasts are downloaded.
Yeah, there's a Channeling Atticus Facebook page, and we, Johnny Gwynn and I, do it from his Deep Fried Studios downtown. It's and there are a bunch of other good podcasts that Johnny and Deep Fried do.
Don't build him up. His head's going to be so big he won't be able to get it through the front door. But yeah, it's good stuff. I recommend that and a lot more for people to check out. But I want to talk about something that was fairly breaking news. We were talking about this morning, it's a new thing where Mayor Stimson has come out with an executive order, and if I'm saying this incorrectly, help correct me. But executive order that would command the remaining stores that are open to not have more than 40% of the store's capacity in there at one time. Is that close to it?
Yeah, it doesn't apply to employees, just applies to patrons and customers. And I kept waiting for the order. You know, he mentioned it yesterday, and mm-hmm. I kept waiting for it. But apparently, I think he had to have city council approval because in the order it says it was the council authorized the mayor to issue orders as appropriate to protect life and property. And there's three components to it. There's a social distancing component. There's a cleaning and sanitation component to it. Limit your time in store, especially for vulnerable populations. It says exclusive hours for those in high-risk populations, including seniors, where stores will limit their capacity to 40% of fire capacity at any time. And it says larger grocery stores and retailers, those with greater than 25,000 square feet, are encouraged to offer pickup and delivery options. And then, you know, they talk about the 6-foot social distancing, clearly marked 6 feet spacing in lines and other high traffic areas, and consider ways to encourage spacing if there are lines outside. Consider posting signage or using ropes to direct customers and to limit bottlenecks encourage flow in the high-density areas of the stores, designate employees to monitor social distancing and assist customers, maximize space between customers and employees at checkout. And it's from the feel of it, reading it, and then listening to the mayor's press conference, he leaves a large degree of autonomy to self-governance among the grocery or retailers, which, you know, I think is good. There doesn't seem to be any heavy-handedness like we see other mayors and other government entities taking. And to his credit, it sounds like, too, that he actually consulted with the people that would be affected by this.
Let me play the other side of the bench here and say, why do it in the first place then? I mean, if there's no real enforcement, it's kind of self-enforcement, right? It sounds like it's not heavy-handed.
Right.
I mean,
where's the incentive to do it?
Yeah, it's just a directive, kind of, but it's coming in the form of an executive order, right?
That's correct. I mean, it's still subject to fines and punitive measures and potential criminal considerations if it comes to that. They're trying to get them to do it, but voluntarily. I think that's the first step. But I think he's left open the option. He said that in his press conference yesterday. He said they'll have teams monitoring.
Okay.
And he says if that seems to be inadequate, then they may reduce it or expand it from 40% to 30% occupancy to make it more stringent. I keep saying, you know, the next, in 2 weeks from now is when we're supposed to be at our peak.
Right.
That's what I keep hearing. Is that kind of what you're hearing?
That's exactly what I'm hearing, Matt. But, you know, I know this might be picking at it, but, okay, let's say that they figure out that we have a clicker here and, you know, Matt and Sean's food emporium is capacity is 100, so we're going to be at 40 under this. Okay. So we use the clicker. Person comes out, then another person can come in. No more than 40 people, customers in the store at any time. Are we supposed to be on the aisles making sure that somebody doesn't pass somebody closer than 6 feet to come get a box of Frosted Flakes? You know, I mean, I'm making fun a little bit, but I'm asking questions. If you're going to enforce a rule, who's responsible? Or I guess the store is responsible for policing their aisles? Or
I think that's at this phase of what's going on. I think that's exactly right. I think they're going to see how.
So what do you do with the person who doesn't? I mean, you as the store owner doing the right thing, say, "Hey, dude, back up. Y'all need to be 6 feet apart." And that person says, "To heck with you. You know, I'm getting those Frosted Flakes." I mean,
right.
I just worry about
the store owner always has the right to eject members of the public for irrespective of violation of law,
right?
As long as it's not based on an improper motive. But this is certainly one that's well within the power of a retailer.
But that's just counterproductive to, you know, everything else going on. If you have to stop down for a fool, right, now we're taking away time. All right, so the way you understand
this, they're looking at closing down, like, delis, too. That was another thing. I made me, you know, the self-serve type, you know, these delis, you know, Publix, where they have the delicious sandwich meats. You know, you always go up there and you meet the friendly guy or woman up there, because they're being closed. So.
No hot bar. That's not good.
No hot bar. That's right.
That's when Dad cooks. Dad goes to the hot bar at Rouse's and cooks. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's when I cook.
Me too.
All right, and we just have about 2 minutes here, but I do want to get your take on the story that I was talking about this morning, and you brought up to me too that Alabama, Massachusetts are handing over the addresses of people with coronavirus to police. Now, somebody told me on the text line this morning it would be kept in a database to go to first responders, so they would know going to a home that person's quarantined with coronavirus. But what do you think about the privacy? Is there a privacy violation here?
Well, that's part of the concern too. But yeah, I mean, how long is this going to last? I mean, why is Alabama? Why are there only two states?
Yeah,
that are
us
doing it?
And Massachusetts. Like, I mean, we don't usually line up on a lot.
they say that Alabama began providing the. It's just, you know, we're talking about a story that ran in Vice News today or yesterday. And it says Alabama and Massachusetts are handling the addresses of people with coronavirus over to they're handing over to the police. And Alabama's actually been doing it for more than a week. And I guess, you know, what else if you know, you do that, and then if things get turned south and then, you know, things get worse, You know, they are the police going to show up now without a warrant and ask the person to be removed and everybody in the house? You know, this may seem far-fetched now, but let's not forget the lessons of Katrina.
Yeah. I just wonder if it, yeah, and, you know, will this, I would hope, but it's not mapped somewhere, right? That it could be leaked. Here's the map of all the cases.
It's certainly ripe for abuse.
So, Alabama, Massachusetts, y'all, soak that one in. The two states that are doing this. It's not something we hear every day. All right, Matt, remind folks, too, if they want to check out the podcast, the name of the podcast?
It's called Channeling Atticus. And it's on Facebook, Libsyn, and then I think we're on the Deep Fried Studios website and Facebook page, too. All different types of things we talk about. We actually had a video podcast day before yesterday where we talked about a lot of things going on with the coronavirus and civil liberties and that sort of thing. So check it out.
About 20 seconds left here, but do you feel that we come out of this pandemic or the fight against coronavirus with some permanent limitations, decreases in civil liberties, or no change?
No, I think these will be some permanent scars on our civil institutions, and we know it's going to be that way with respect to businesses. How much longer can they hold on? There is a significant, I think, public health concern with millions of Americans being out of work, unemployed, no health insurance. I think that's a public health crisis that we need to be talking a little bit more about.
Well said. We'll have to get you back on to do exactly that. Matt, thank you. 12:30, coming right back. All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Text lines open for you at 343-0106, 343-0106. Big thanks to Matt Green. And, hey, coming up next hour, too, this is something I think a lot of people are trying to figure out, trying to navigate, trying to be most efficient in doing as people work from home. Okay, it's easier said than done. You'll hear a bunch of stats. Oh, more Americans working from home than ever before. Yeah, maybe y'all have really like calm, non-chaotic houses. But for a lot of us, home is where the mayhem is. It's loving and great mayhem, but it's mayhem. If you got, like, we have the kids doing online school at our house, and then if you're trying to work from home and do that, how do you navigate that? How do you, like, actually do your job without being distracted and all that? So we have Dr. Jim Gilkey joining us in the next hour to talk about just this. If you're somebody who all of a sudden is now telecommuting, you're working from home, how do you concentrate on your work? How do you, figure out what's productive, what's not productive? How do you deal with the kids at the same time you're dealing with work? So we'll talk all about that next hour. And you may want to text in your questions on that. All right. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, my friend from Visit Mobile, which is we're going to get into, Emily Gonzalez joining us right now. Emily, welcome. And what's it like at Visit Mobile when we're telling everybody not to visit?
Hey, Sean, it's always great to be with you. Thank you for having me on today. Visit Mobile's a little different. As you very well know, but some of your listeners may not, our job is literally to invite people into the city. We have two different aspects that we work with. One, the convention and meeting side. We work with sports and all that fun stuff. And the other is kind of more the leisure traveler, people coming in to go on cruise ships and do food tours and historic tours and things of the nature. And right now, our world is kind of on a pause. We're asking people to not come to the city and to actually not move around the city. So a lot of what happens when we support our restaurant partners and our local attractions and so forth is just we're telling people in the city of itself, hey, go do these pretty awesome things. We have an easy job. Mobile is super, super awesome. So when you love what you do, it's really easy. And we definitely love the city. But what we've been able to do through this crisis is kind of turn things and make a pivot. We're still doing absolutely everything we can to support our city. We have always had a great relationship with the administration and the Chamber of Commerce and Downtown Alliance and the Restaurant and Hospitality Associations. So we're taking that and those relationships and being a central hub source of information for everyone. If you look on almost everyone's website, you will find some information about COVID-19. Wash your hands, these are the resources, that type of information. And we, of course, have that on our website, mobile.org. But we've also created a few additional things that are really turning out to be great roundhouse information sources for everyone. One is we have a full list of businesses, restaurants, attractions, retail, things like that, that are still open, and the list of those that are temporarily closed. We also have a form on that page, so if you are one of those businesses that's still open and you want to be listed, please let us know so we can get you added. A second thing that we're doing is we have an events page. So that's where we're taking all of the events that have been canceled or postponed, and we're letting you know what's happening with those. A lot that are being postponed still don't have dates yet, but when we find them out, we're adding them to it so you can know what's happening. One of the fun things that we've done with the events page is turn around and we have a lot of social distancing friendly events. So we've had the Cheese Cottage do how to make cheese boards. We have tours and things of that nature, video tours, the Oyster Trail, so you can do walking tours and driving tours. The History Museum of Mobile has done actual walkthroughs, so it feels like you're getting walked through the exhibit with a personal docent. And they have some educational things with that. And anything that you're doing, Facebook Live, musicians, anything like that, just we're scrolling through every feed we can to try to find any information to share with others to continue to promote Mobile just in a safe virtual way. Right when the actual health department and the city of Mobile shut down in-room dining, we immediately partnered up with the city and Mobile Downtown Alliance and kicked off Takeout Mobile. And that was very well received. We did that immediately on that Friday, and the businesses that were still open absolutely loved the support that they received. We continued that last Friday, and we will continue that thought and momentum moving forward to support the businesses that are still staying open. With that, we've had a big message that, hey, we're all Mobile strong, and we want to continue to be Mobile strong. We've been that way. We've gone through storms. We've gone through oil spills. We've gone through a lot in our city, and we've proven to be a resilient community. And the people that are really coming to light right now are just absolutely hometown heroes. And as we were talking about these heartwarming stories of everyone we kept hearing about, we decided to put together another campaign called Hometown Heroes. And we've launched that on all of our social media platforms where you can see a lot of different people, and please nominate people if you know. But they're just making big impacts and big differences in the community. They're going above and beyond and helping in ways that are outside of the scope. So we want to make sure that they are loved on in this time. And of course, we're just trying to be an absolute resource to everyone. We have one extra page on our website with under this kind of umbrella of information that we're trying to get out, and it's the local resources. In the best of times, absolute best of times, if you find yourself personally falling on hard times, it's really confusing to find out where you can get help, where you can find shelter, where you can get counseling, where you can find your next meal, all of those things. And we have scrolled through and have great partnerships with different organizations throughout the community, and we're trying to be a central resource to say this is what is still open, it's allowed to be open, that these are people who are serving you and how you can reach them. So we're really just trying to be a resource to absolutely everyone while we're here, because our ultimate job year-round is to serve our community, and this is how we can best serve them right now.
Just joining us, talking to Vice President of Marketing and Communications with Visit Mobile, Emily Gonzalez. Emily, do you, in your capacity, what you do here in Mobile, do you have a chance to, during all this, to talk to people who do what you do in other communities? Y'all share ideas? Is there any of that going on, networking?
There is a tremendous amount of networking. Year-round, we have hidden, social media groups and forums and chat rooms and so forth where we share ideas. And a lot of us have actually split off and said, and started groups that are specifically around what are we doing for this particular crisis. Because like the rest of the country, we're seeing something that we've never seen before. We are no stranger here in Mobile County and Baldwin County to a crisis. But normally it's an event. mm-hmm. and it's not a season.
Yes.
So what we're dealing with here and how organizations are built and what the messaging is and what the sustainability is, our hearts are just breaking, and it's literally our job to stay positive for everyone and to see the future and to know what's happening in the future. And, you know, we will see light on the other side of this. And, you know, April 30th feels like a really long time away, but we already have the game plan in motion of what we're going to do when we get that green light to say, y'all, we're clear, let's come on back. We're a city that was born to celebrate, and I'm sure we'll throw a nice party on the other side of this to come, and be our southern hospitable selves and hug one another and all the things that we're allowed to do when we're allowed to do them. But right now we want to be very, very respectful of what we're not allowed to do and support the people who are still trying to stay in business through it.
Yeah, and try to get this over as soon as possible, you know, in our area and in the country. I wonder about that with the companies that would come in. And I know you're doing a lot for us here, and you say serving our community. And obviously that is very important, and people need to go to mobile.org and check that out. But I wonder on the business side, is there any discussion yet with companies that would come in for conventions or bring people in? Are they saying, hey, we're interested, but we're going to let this float and call you back in 2 weeks? Or are they just gone? Are they not talking about it at all?
That's an absolutely fantastic question, and I'm glad you asked. And we're being extremely transparent about this. Actually, on our events page that I just told you about, at the very bottom you can see a list of all of our meetings and conventions. We, on a monthly basis, publish our monthly convention calendar, so you know who's scheduled to come in for the month. The restaurants and attractions and so forth can staff up. For the month of March, we had 12 conventions that were coming in, and 9 of those 12 rescheduled for later in the year. 3 were just simply, they were forced into that date, and they wouldn't be gathering again for another, you know, 2 to 3 years. So they just canceled their meetings altogether. 3 cancellations is really not bad at all. We've had a handful of moving organizations in April, just 1 cancellation there, and then for the rest of the year we're really not seeing anything. Everyone's really kind of holding. Being a drive market, we are really in a very nice situation. We're a second tier market, and people can get to us. So the thought of when we can get back together, we want to, and we're not going to be afraid of getting in planes and airports and things of that nature. So a lot of those are just holding strong. So we're very, very thankful for that. And we have not seen the impact that a lot of our other sister cities have seen.
Yeah, I wonder that there's going to be a pent-up demand that will eventually be freed by this when we get the go-ahead. I mean, I worry for restaurants, and we're still going to do takeout. Lord knows, I've done more takeout, I think, ever before in my life here over the last couple weeks, and we continue trying to support local restaurants. But listen, you can't stockpile meals. You can't, when this all is done, go eat 50 meals that you would have eaten, you know, at a walk-in restaurant in the past. But conventions and things of the like, they're going to have them eventually, right? I mean, there can be pent-up demand there to where maybe we go from, like you said, we're in a pretty good position here with only 3 cancellations, but if there are more down the road, I got to think that those people do rebook and do have those events sometime in the future. They don't just blow them all off.
You're absolutely correct. We are very lucky, you know, our offices are in the convention center, so we have a very close relationship with ASM, which was SMG, the organization that manages the convention center, civic center, and Sanger. And really what we're seeing, so we have the ear of them, and we're able to pick their brain and ask what's really happening, mm-hmm. Not just for the meetings and conventions, but the event side. And the vast majority of everyone is really working to reschedule. And not just reschedule, but reschedule in the year for the year. So if at all possible, if they can have the meeting space and there's the hotel rooms available, there's not already some other big thing scheduled at that point, they're doing everything they can to make that move.
What do you hear from the cruise industry, from Carnival? What any information from them, their plans?
Yeah, well, we also have a very close relationship with Carnival, and I'm not going to speak directly for them, but I can let you know that they are making very intricate, very, you know, me, every time I get with you, I say the wrong word. they're trying to be very wise about what they do, and everything's fluid. Just like the U.S., we thought we were looking at mid-April, and now we're looking at April 30th. We do know that when they do come back, they're probably not going to cruise in every port at all the time. And they're not going to, just like the rest of every industry, it's not going to be 100% on May 1st. They'll have to ramp back up. So they'll choose which ports they choose from, and they'll choose which ships they just decide to use. And we're proactively working to continue a very strong relationship that's already there, and try to be on that short list of opportunities that open up when they decide to start sailing again.
All right. We appreciate the good work y'all are doing for us here at home and representing us around the country and around the world. Emily, thank you for what you're doing. Thanks for your time, and I have to get you back on real soon.
Always a pleasure.
All right. Emily Gonzalez from Visit Mobile, our guest, and we're coming right back. Grab some calls and text at 343-0106, 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:51, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Coming up at 1, a series of stories I have, but one of them from Gabe Tynes over at Lanyap. Now, we talked about the 800-something pages of the CARE Act, and we've been focused in trying to discern and wander through the questions here on the SBA loans and the CARE Act and the one-time payments and the unemployment benefits and insurance. Those questions have come up. Would it surprise you, as we talked about the pork that was put in the bill, right? And there's a whole bunch put in at first. Some very big things that were taken out, you know, the Pelosi bill, where she had it versus what the Senate did. But a story from Gabe Tynes here over at Landapp says, Gabe says, headline, massive coronavirus stimulus package includes additional dredging funds for the port. Now, this is going to be, you know, I like stories that are not, I know most of talk radio is where something is just so easy on one side and it's just used as a bludgeon against the other side. But this is one of those tough ones, right? If you're a homer and believe in, you know, success here for Mobile and for the port, at the same time, you're somebody who shakes their fist at those people putting riders in important pieces of legislation that have a very short timeline to get done. How do you sit with this one? We'll talk about it coming up. And also, I want to add this to the list. Shane gave me a call, and his wife, Carolyn, works, because we've been working on getting masks, N95 and higher masks. I know y'all have done fantastic work getting those masks to USA Children's and Women's Hospital. Thank you. Keep it up. They're looking for new, like in the blister pack or the bag or whatever, the N95 or higher mask. Also, I got a note here about home health care workers in Washington County and North Mobile County. What's up, Citronelle? What's up, Chatham? The Amerisys home health workers, they are in need of masks. What they do is they go into homes for physical therapy, working with geriatric cases as well, in-home wound care for older folks, right, who can least risk the chance of getting COVID-19. They are in need of masks, too. Okay, so they're doing in-home health work. And their phone number here, 404-1710, 404-1710. I'll keep that here at the studio. If you're in anywhere, but if you're like in Citronelle or if you're in Chatham up that way and you have some of these N95 or higher masks and would like to donate these and help out, here's another group in big need of those masks. And the phone number is 404-1710. Amerisys Home Health is the name of the group, but we'll keep that contact info right here and hopefully be able to connect you to them. All right, to the phones, and it's our buddy Ron Reams checking in. Hey, Ron.
Hey, how you doing, Sean?
Doing good, man. So what's up on the election front?
Well, as everybody knows, the runoff has been delayed till July 14th, and I just wanted to let people know, even though our office is closed, the three members of the Board of Registrars are still working, and if people want to register to vote for the runoff or even the November general election, they can still do so. There are two main ways. They can go to alabamavotes.gov, G GOV, AlabamaVotes.gov. They can register online, or they can mail in. There's another way, and I'm going blank right now.
Come on,
sorry
Ron.
About that. But anyway, the thing is, you can get a registration here at the office. Even though the doors are closed, the building is open. We put registration blanks out in front of our office.
Okay, wait. The door. Explain to people. The doors of the Board of Registrars are closed, but your building, which is what building?
It's the probate court building. It's next door to the Government Plaza. It's called the Courthouse Annex.
And it's open.
It is east of the current Government Plaza.
Y'all, that means towards Daphne and Spanish Fort, y'all.
That is correct.
People are lost.
So anyway, if you haven't registered to vote and you'd like to do so, you can still do so.
Yeah. When does the with that July 14th date, and that was set way out, which is good because you're seeing like they had to reconvene to set a new date to convene up in Montgomery yesterday. So it's good to set it way out. But what happens if we're looking at a situation, let's say you and I are talking here in late June, and God forbid it's not much better. What happens to that process? Would the governor move it again?
Well, you don't have a whole lot of choice if they're still asking people to quarantine.
So what happens then? How close can you get to November, right, with this, before the general?
You would hope that we'd be not having to deal with that situation.
Well, I hope and pray we're not. I'm with you. Believe me.
Yeah.
I just wonder, the what ifs. I mean, there's so many questions here that I don't know answers to.
Well, that's kind of like what the governor of New York was saying earlier today, and that we don't have the answers because we don't know. So you got to cross the bridge when you get to it.
I mean, it is okay on occasion to say you don't know, I think.
Yeah.
I think. And that's, I think there's a lot of that going on right now, Ron. So once again, though, if somebody has said, I missed my registration, they now actually get a little breath of some room here and they can get registered to vote.
Yep. And what you need to do is make sure about a month before the election is probably when they're going to shut off, basically, because we have to have time to make sure all of those registrations are input into the computer. So on election day, you don't walk up and they say, well, you're not listed. I'm sorry. No, that doesn't work too good.
No, but I'll say this, a compliment. The turnaround was pretty good. We moved this year, late last year we moved. And when I filed my change, it turned around. I was like, oh, gosh, this is going to take forever. It turned around real fast. So good
That's
job.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
It was a good thing. All right, Ron, we appreciate the update, and hopefully we will be voting July 14th.
Take care, bud.
All right, you too. Coming right back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. So you got the CARES Act that comes out, right? The CARES Act, $2 trillion economic stimulus package. We all worried about what kind of riders would be put in there. But what if one of them was specifically benefiting us in Mobile? We'll talk about this story when we get back.